The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Nick Wakeman, editor of Washington Technology. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Always good to be here.
Always good to have you, because there's always a lot of neat things to talk about. Hell, we could do this probably every week. number one, give people a little bit of background on you. And if, God forbid, people listening to this show don't know who Washington Technology is, but tell them what you do.
Yeah, Washington Technology, we're a website that covers government contractors, the business of being a contractor. So we write about awards, we write about M&A, we write about, you know, trends in the marketplace, all with the idea of, you know, giving you some business intelligence so you can be more successful and be a smarter contractor. And I've been here for, gosh, a long time now. So.
And you have a brain trust of people that write for you who
yes.
represent various areas of expertise in the market.
Yes, including Mark Amtower.
Including Mark Amtower. So, the... I read this thing over the weekend, a GAO report talking about the rise of protests, and they tied it to the real dollars being down about 25%, inflation-adjusted dollars being down about 25% over the last X number of years, hence the increase of protests. I know you write about all kinds of interesting protests on WashTech. So what's going on here?
Well, you know, I think there's multiple things going on, and you hit a big one there, is that, you know, with that contraction in the market, and you've got fewer, you know, more companies chasing fewer dollars, and then so winning becomes just so important. So there some companies are exercising the bid protest just to grab every chance, you know, they have to win something. And then, you know, the government, of course, is very focused on price, and so that's putting pressure on incumbents. So you see a lot of incumbents that are losing, and they're protesting. And then contracts, on top of that, contracts are more being shifted to small business. So that shrinks the pool even a little bit more for the large businesses who are trying to, you know, hang on to every dollar they can.
Okay. So we have you know, all types of protests coming here. You've got the the MilVets thing.
Yes. Gosh, you got to feel bad for MilVets. I mean, here they win a contract twice and get hit with protests, and then so they go through two rounds like that, and the agency reevaluates it, and then they award it to a different company. So of course, MilVets is like, wait a minute, we had this, and so they protest, and the agency, Army, I believe it was, pulls it back again, or Department of Agriculture, excuse me, and then awards it to another company, and MilVets again protests, and this time on the fourth round, you know, they went all the way through, and GAO ruled against them. But what I think is really interesting is that it took three rounds before agriculture kind of got their act together. And for that fourth round, they actually brought in a new group of people to evaluate the contracts and do a source selection. And they got new, you know, revised proposals from everybody and new discussions. And so it took them four chances to get it right, and they finally got it right, it looks like. But poor MilVets, I mean, they just got to be pulling their hair out over there.
That's just insane. But you also have protests on, you know, like the GWACs. When the Soup Award came out early last year, there was an immediate protest, and I know that the PM over at Soup, Joanne Wojtek, really didn't want, you know, 100 plus contractors. But what, you know, how many did they end up with after?
Oh gosh, I think I mean, it's a lot more. They pretty much gave it to everybody, And then at the end of the day, everybody that could meet a certain threshold. And I think part of that was as well, you know, is it that much harder to manage, you know, 75 as it is to manage 50? And it plus it got them, you know, out back out in the market quicker with the new contract. Because among those big GWACs, there's competition between those GWACs. And so, you know, the agency has that pressure of, wait a minute, we can't be delayed, because then, you know, the agencies are going to, the agencies still need to buy stuff. They'll move off our contract to somebody else. And so I think they took that as the easy way out, I guess. And, but they do have, not the easy way out, but as the more strategic thing, but they do have an off ramp. So if companies aren't hitting, you know, aren't selling anything, they might get, you know, pushed off. And then they're also doing on ramps to get new companies on there. So I think the on-ramp, off-ramp, on-ramp thing is something that's going to be very common in the next over the next 10 years. Because with Alliant 2, they're also talking about, you know, they're going to have on-ramps for that contract.
Right, but that brings up an interesting twist. Before that off-ramp occurs, you have companies like Vistronix and others making a play for those non-productive contract holders.
Right, right. Yeah, because Vistronix buying, I'm drawing a blank now, Chechacek was who the ultimate owner of that contract was. And they did, I think they had like 8 task orders or something. It was a ridiculous low amount. They weren't doing anything with it. So Vistronix looked at that and, you know, they know there's still probably 3 years at least before Alliant 2 is out and ready for, you know, task orders. So they've got a period of time in there where they can really, you know, use Alliant 1, get on Alliant 2, and be ready to go.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, though. I've advised a number of small companies on getting on various of the GWAC vehicles, especially over the last 3 years, because you had the award of CIO-CS, you had the award of Soup 5, you know, Alliant 2's coming down the pike. So I've been advising a number of companies how to position themselves to get on and finding them, you know, the right BD capture proposal writer people to work with, you know, if they had nobody in-house or if they had insufficient in-house. But what's funny is I've had a couple of them call after winning and saying, oh, we won. Now, how do we sell off this thing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a cottage industry for some folks out there, helping those companies, you know, do that.
Yes, myself included.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to help you with your RFQ process, and that's a large part of the GWAC machine. But, you know, companies calling saying, how do I know which RFQs to bid on? Well, what do you sell? You know, yeah. let's start there.
And that's really, you know, the bottom line for a lot of these companies. You really need to know what you do, and so because you can't bid on everything. No one has the resources really for that. So you got to be selective and responsive, because the turnaround time is really short on a lot of these task orders.
Yep. And you know, then you have let's migrate back to the protest side of things.
Sure.
You just had the award of ITES, what, 93 or something? I don't know how many iterations of ITES have been. So what is it, 3 or 4?
This is number 3.
Only 3?
3H.
Yeah,
yep.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. but you know, I mean, you did a blog post. Is there going to be a protest? And you know, I was a little surprised at the headline. Then I figured, oh, Nick's being cute again. So
yeah,
yeah. But how soon is it going to occur?
I think there's a good chance we won't see any, because you know what they did this time, which I didn't realize when they, you know, when I first was writing about the awards when they came out, was they did a two-phase evaluation or contract. So they eliminated a lot of companies in phase one, and they got hit then with, I think, 19 or 20 bid protests. And the Army prevailed on most of those, but there were 4 companies that they put back in. I think it was Dell, Telos.
Whoever.
Yeah. Four companies there, they put back into the competitive range. And then there were several other companies that lost their bid protest but then filed with the Court of Federal Claims. And of those, Microtech, you know, prevailed. So Microtech got put back in. But these others, like, you know, Red River, you know, the Court of Federal Claims sided with the Army. And so they're not, you know, that's probably the biggest name that's not on there.
That's a surprise.
Yeah. Carisoft, they protested, but then it got denied and they didn't go any farther. They didn't, I guess they were like, you know, we're not going to waste our money.
Well, frankly, so, that's another surprise.
Yeah, those were two very big surprises to me, because so you have, was it nine? You have 17 primes now under ITES 2H, and but I don't think we'll see. I think they kind of went through that protest phase earlier. But now the question I ask too is, okay, you know, you let all these companies in, and then you gave everybody that was in phase two an award, so. Why did that take, you know, six more months or whatever, you know, the time it took for that to come out? So
yeah.
They pretty much did everything with phase one. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We still have another week or so to see if that holds. There's a 10-day window once you do have your debrief.
Cool.
But
all right. Yeah. Listen, we're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm talking with Nick Wakeman, and we'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest is Nick Wakeman, editor-in-chief of WashingtonTechnology.com. Nick, I mean, we spent a fair amount of time on protests and buying your way into vehicles on segment one. And I would encourage companies that lost out on GWACs, you know, this just to digress a second, this off-ramp idea where, you know, GWACs will kind of nudge companies to the side. I would very much encourage companies that missed the opportunity on those GWACs to take a very careful look at the underproducing winners on those contracts and maybe try to purchase some assets to get on the vehicles if you think you can do better.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
We've seen that a few times over the years. So,
yeah.
which gets us to the topic that I want to address, which is acquisition strategy. So, I mean, GSA has done a lot of things, and I'm not going to editorialize here. Suffice it to say, I'm not a fan of a lot of it. But you know, it's the world as we know. You know, I got no vote. So consolidated buying to leverage price. Start at the top and work your way any way you want.
Sure. Yeah. You know, what we've seen over the last few years is GSA and OMB really pushing forward this idea of consolidating and leveraging the buying power the government has, and they've started off with you know real basic commodity things like, you know, PCs and laptops, and you know, and one of the things they kind of the first step they're doing is collecting data. What are agencies buying, and they with PCs and laptops they came up with sort of some standard configurations. I want to say it's like five or six that are, you know, cover like 80% of the buys. And so they're forcing buyers to say, okay, you have to use, these are the standard configurations. You're going to pick one of these. And here are the three vehicles. I think it's
SUP, CIOCS, and GSA 70.
Yes, exactly. So you have to buy off of those three unless there's some, otherwise, if you're not going to use those, you have to justify why you're special, why you need to do something else.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because one of the big categories on ITES, which you referenced earlier, is laps.
Yes, yeah. So, I think it'll be interesting how they're going to be able to push agencies into that and how, I don't know if you want to talk about, you know, transition to the next administration yet or not.
We'll get there.
Yeah, but there's several things going on right now. You've got, you know, this consolidated buying. which feeds, you know, feeds out of like the overarching idea of category management, where, you know, the government, you know, idealistically, I guess, or taking the best, like they're trying to be a smarter buyer. They try to understand what are we buying, how often do we buy it, what are we paying, and that's the big thing that the same company might be selling something in one agency for this price and the same thing somewhere else at a different price. But I think where the government struggles with is understanding why there's the price difference. And it might, you know, there might be, you know, usually very legitimate reasons, other deals, you know, volume, the government doesn't understand how the commercial market works. And I think that they're trying to get at that more with, you know, taking the best, like that's sort of what category management is.
Well, you know, it would help if they had people doing this who had been in the private sector then.
That's true. That's very true. And having some more, getting a smarter, you know, workforce in the government is a huge issue. And I'm not sure many people pick procurement as their career path when they get, you know, start off. So,
Cowboy Indian Chief Procurement Officer.
Yeah. But category management and, you know, of course, strategic sourcing is sort of, again, what's happening with the PCs and laptops, where you're trying to consolidate those buys, trying to, you know, use the volume, you know, standardize, you know, using standards, you know, that kind of thing. And then you get over on the DoD side, and they have the better buying power. And, you know, I think there's some good things about that. The thing that bothers me so often, though, is there is a focus at times where the government wants to know what the private sector's profit is. And to me, that's just, you know,
a bridge too far.
It definitely is a bridge too far.
I agree.
What does it matter if you were paying $100 for a product and now you're going to get it for $80? Who cares if the seller is still, you know, making a 12-13% profit?
Well, this is where their lack of private sector experience really comes into play, because they don't understand what margin pays for. They don't understand the supply chain. They don't understand just so many things that happen on the contractor side of the fence to get the product or service to market.
Right. Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there.
Pisses me off.
But, you know, with all these things going on, the other side of it is, you know, companies are having to rethink, you know, sales strategies and understand their own cost and getting a grip on, like, well, okay, so why are we, you know, what can we do? How can we, you know, still be successful? And I think, you know, it really pushes companies to be extremely efficient, because your margins are going to get squeezed doing this. You're not going to make as much profit with these consolidated buys. And so how, you know, then there's that ripple effect of, like, okay, how do we structure our sales force? You know, what type of people do we have on our sales force? How do we do, you know, BD, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, and then a number of people inside government, I'll let it go with that, keep saying, you know, and we're doing so much for small business. Well, you know, if you squeeze margins on small business, particularly small business that deals in product, they don't have direct relationships with manufacturers. They've got to use the channel. I mean, frankly, there's only one or two pure resellers that have direct relationships, companies the size of CDW, because technically you get, you know, Carahsoft, DLT, Immix Group. Those aren't resellers. They're value-added distributors for the government market.
Right.
So, you know, and they work with smaller companies, but every time you pass it along, there has to be a little bit more margin left for whoever's at the end of the food chain selling to the government to do that. And you know, The from my perspective, the two-faced aspect of what the government's saying is there's so much for small business, there's so much for small business, yet when they put these squeeze on, the first ones to die are small business.
Yeah, because that relationship, especially on the product side, that relationship with the manufacturer, I think that the MX, the DLTs, the Karasoffs, CDWG, they hold a lot of power.
Yeah, now. They do.
And I think,
The size demands that.
Yeah. There's no, and on the manufacturer side, they're like, well, I don't want to have to deal with, 100, 200 small businesses. I can deal with MX or DLT or Karasoft, and we'll push through them, and then they manage the small businesses for us.
Right, and the manufacturers also don't usually want to deal direct with government because
right.
of the plethora of rules, regulations, and they've seen too often GSA hitting companies with truly substantial fines for normal business practices.
Yeah. The IG's been kind of quiet here lately, but they're always out there. And I think one reason they've been quiet is because you've seen so many companies pull out of their direct relationship with the government.
They don't want it.
Yeah.
And frankly, I encourage them to use the channel. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm talking with Nick Wakeman, editor of Washington Technology. You can find him at washingtontechnology.com. I suggest you do so. There's some great stuff to read there. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest is Nick Wakeman, editor of Washington Technology. Find him at washingtontechnology.com. You can look him up on LinkedIn as well. Nick, cloud finally seems to have hit a really pretty strong stride here. So what isn't offered as a service?
What isn't offered as a service?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't know. I think pretty much everything is, isn't it?
Well, there.
Everything as a service.
Everything is a service. Is EaaS a new category?
not quite yet. I mean, I think they still. Would you have infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service? What else is there? Applications as a service.
Yeah, AaaS. So
yeah. But I think you're right. I mean, I think cloud has sort of settled in as a regular way of doing business. I think people are more comfortable with it, and so I think it'll continue to grow and to evolve. It hasn't, it is a game changer, but it hasn't been as huge a game changer, I think, as people thought 5 years ago. You know, that we've gone through the hype cycle, and now it's sort of the business practice, but you're seeing, it's popping up everywhere. Sort of agencies want it as one of their choices on how they address their needs. So, email, sort of the low hanging fruit, is pretty common now. I don't think anybody's gonna, not use the cloud for email if they're doing a new system. But then there's other areas. I mean, I think they're seeing, and I think they've gotten away from the idea of it being a cost savings. But it does, I think, take some pressure off management because they're pushing the risk and the stuff off to the contractor.
Well, the cost side was intriguing to me too, because I read a little bit about that over the weekend, and usually the government is very, very, very sensitive on the cost side of things, but the trade-off here is very real.
Yes.
And is that because of the management issues? Is that because of the security? What are the other factors?
Well, I think it's management. I think part of it is you can get into kind of the color of the money, where the OPEX versus CapEx, it's more of an operating expense, shifts that money over to another part of the budget. I think they're drawn to the flexibility, particularly if you're an agency that doesn't, the IRS is the prime example. You have that real busy season. FEMA is another one where, there's a disaster, you need all this computing power. And so, I think that's there. I think they're seeing, the cloud as the best way to do mobile, that you need that that kind of infrastructure in place, and a lot of development, you know, development work, agile. You could build these environments and test things quicker and get them to scale quicker and things like that. So I think that's what they're, you know, that's been the big draw.
Yeah, on the agile side, I'll go back to GWAX for a moment. I had Rob Cohn from NITAC on a month or so back, maybe a little longer. But one of the things that he was talking about, and it kind of ties into the Vitara, was the ability of the GWAC platform, particularly contracts like CIOCS or perhaps SOUP 5, to be an agile procurement vehicle for the agency CIOs who need to track all of these things. But the intriguing thing about the NITAC vehicle, CIOCS, is they have this EGOS, and I forget what EGOS stands for, but it's basically a platform where you can, it's a dashboard kind of feature where you can see all of the things you bought, you know, who they're from, when they were delivered, how they were deployed, you know, pretty much anything you need to know on that side of things. So I just thought that was I don't know if it ties into what we were saying or not, but it certainly made sense to me.
Yeah, no, that's that ability to, whether it's the cloud or whatever, but that ability to have it, that the dashboards are a big thing. You know, you can look at and just see where your resources are going, you know, what's working, what's not working. And hopefully that'll all make, you know, more efficient, better run government. So we'll see.
Yeah, I have no problem with the transparency side. I have no problem with getting the best deal side. Where I have the problem is squeezing out contractors on the small side when you say you're not.
Yeah.
Picking my scab.
but you know, we haven't talked about this, but then it does, you know, the small business are being squeezed, but boy, the middle tier.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
What is the middle tier? That's,
well, in the middle tier, you know, there's been a, you know, the Salient deal last year where Brad Antel merged his company with CRGT. You know, they're combining areas to strengthen their positions, and you know, they focused on a lot of different things there, and you know, Brad's been one of the leaders in the agile procurement side of things, the agile contracting side of things, the agile growth, agile software. So I mean, you know, happy to see that, but
well, you know, just to, you know, this is a little bit off topic, but that Salient deal, the thing I like about that deal, and I'm surprised we don't see more of them, is that really is as close to a true merger as you can get in this market. You had two companies basically the same size, and they're merging them together. You know, Brad's the CEO, and the name escapes me now, the CEO of CRGT, but he's the chairman. I mean, you could see how, you know, they've meshed their management teams. One isn't swallowing up the other. And I'm really surprised, especially these companies that are at the $200, you know, $300, $400 million range, why they aren't looking for another company close to their size that they can merge with and all of a sudden kind of start pushing themselves quickly out of the mid-tier into the larger, you know, that billion-plus range.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is that I think a lot of times it comes down to personality. You have a lot of these entrepreneurs who've been their own boss and can't.
They don't want to let go.
Don't want to let go. So, you know, hats off to Brad for, you know, because I think there was give and take to make that work. And I think, you know, those two companies, they were able to see the bigger picture and move forward with it.
Well, the other thing, and tell me if you haven't heard anything either, I haven't heard any ripples about the cultures not meshing.
Right.
And usually we can pick up, you know, some sort of sign that that's happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So nothing there. Which you know, again, speaks to all of the due diligence on the front end of that deal. So very cool. I want to change gears a little bit. You had mentioned to me off air about a potential mobile contract freeze. What's this and where's it going?
Yeah, I think they're following a similar path as as you know, and they're talking about OMB and GSA as they did with laptops and desktops, where they're going to try and I think they're working on a policy to you know, consolidate, you know, existing contracts, force agencies to pick from a few plans, from a few vehicles as a way of you know, getting costs down, because they see that, you know, again, probably 80% they're buying close to the same two or three, four configurations of things. So, you know, it's another sign of that whole strategic sourcing, you know, trend. So we're going to see them, you know, GSA and OMB moving out, looking for these opportunities where agencies are buying common things, you know, and trying to get those things down to a few handful of contracts.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they have significant cost savings there, I'd like a piece of that action.
Yeah.
I don't like paying my mobile bill.
I know.
I don't like reading the damn thing. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'll be back with Nick Wakeman of Washington Technology after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest is Nick Wakeman, editor-in-chief, main guy, whatever, WashingtonTechnology.com. If you don't visit WashingtonTechnology.com, I mean, there's two places that I get most of my news, FederalNewsRadio.com and WashingtonTechnology.com. Not that I have an opinion. but you know, I mean, and for the contractor side of the universe, you know, both are quite robust, but Nick focuses on nothing but. But you know, let's go back to the M&A thing. Where do you see most deals going? Is it still in the health arena? Is it in the cyber arena? What kind of mix do we have?
Kind of all, you know, both those areas are going to keep being, you know, health, cyber. I think you know, data analytics is a big area. You know, what else? I mean,
big data is part of that.
But, yeah, big data is part of that. I think cloud is you know, part of that. And frankly, as we've talked before, you know, contracts, what contracts and what customers you have are going to be, can make you an attractive, you know, target of an acquisition. But I think, you know, and then for some companies, it is going to be about getting up to scale. It's really interesting. You know, Leidos is buying, making this deal to buy, you know, Lockheed's IT business, which Leidos then will be, you know, huge, you know, almost twice the size of its next closest competitor. And so when I first started looking at that, I was talking to some people. I said, well, you're going to see, will this put pressure on, you know, Northrop and GD and you know, CSRA and CACI to kind of try to get closer to that size. And the interesting thing was, a lot of people said, no, you know, those companies are, you know, $5-6 billion. There's really not that much pressure on them. Where the pressure is those companies that are back there at that $1-2 billion range that they need to move up into that $4-6 billion range.
Right, but it begs the question as to why Lockheed divested itself of that unit rather than grow it.
Well, I think, yeah, that's a very good question. I think, you know, their IT business, I think, had, I don't want to say necessarily lower end, but they were much more in the LPTA world, where they were really having to compete on price, and I think they were struggling with that. They, you know, the business was shrinking. They, the time, attention, and resources to keep that business where they wanted it to be just wasn't the direction that Lockheed wants to go. I mean, they bought Sikorsky basically at the same time. They, you know, made those announcements, and that I think shows where they want to go. They want to be, you know, more on the technology side, more on the platform side that has a longer
life cycle,
longer life thing. I think you know, when they went through sequestration, I think they, you know, and a lot of companies got really hammered because IT was easier to cut for their short-term, you know, quick quick cuts by the government, because the government couldn't go in and cut, you know, these big platform companies, you know, platform projects, because they stretch out over years, and it would just be, you know, a big mess. But if you're like, oh, well, let's delay this IT project, you know, 10 months and save X, you know, million, that was an easier bite for the government to take. And so I think that really hurt a lot of companies. But I think Lockheed and others looked at that and like, you know, let's get more security in these big platforms. And then, you know, you sell an F-35, you've got 20 years of back-end work supporting that, too. So, but then, you know, so them selling that, though, creates opportunities for others who are focused in on IT and what it takes to be an successful IT business.
Mm-hmm.
But, the Leidos deal surprised me, because I really thought that, you know, it was such a big chunk for somebody to buy that they would spin it out as an independent company first. But we'll see how Leidos makes it work. I mean, a lot of people are very, very skeptical about it, you know, being that big and, you know, all those pieces. But we'll see.
We'll chat about it in about a year, year and a half, and see how they're doing. but, you know, I mean, you know, that begs the question on business models. How are these things changing? You're talking about the mid-market companies like Salient and CRGT merging to, you know, migrate up, you know, three steps in on the size scale. Leidos and Lockheed becoming, you know, really the bull moose of the IT side of things. Well, kind of. You know, I certainly wouldn't discount CSRA or GDIT or Northrop in that arena either. But, you know, I mean, when you talk about the business models, I mean, you know, one of the reasons that companies like Salient was so successful even prior to the CRGT thing was their focus on some very, very specific areas.
Right. And for the small and mid-tier, that's really what they have to do. You have to become an expert, because you know, that's what the government is going to buy and pay you know, more premium dollars for, is expertise and solutions that you can come in and show them. You know, you hire us, we can do this, and it's going to save you this, or it's going to make you more efficient here. That's the real key to success. And that shift in the market, the government, you know, whether it's everything as a service or what, the government isn't as interested in, buying the butts in seats kind of thing. They're more, as the government slowly evolves and looks more at outcomes, it's going to really change. You know, they're not going to be looking at, okay, I wanted 50 people here today in these chairs. You know, where are they? And like, well, instead, they're going to be like, I wanted this capability. Where is it? And I think that's a big, you know, a big change on both sides, the way the government manages their contracts and the way contractors, you know, kind of deliver what they're hired to do. And I think that's where, you know, the mid-tier can shine. The bigger companies, and the bigger companies are doing that too, but, you know, you see companies like, you know, Angelity, you know, SAIC to a certain degree, but these others that are trying to get this scale so that they can then, you know, have a lower, you know, get that economies of scale and offer, you know, services at a lower cost, but still be profitable because they're bigger. That's sort of the you know, so you have like two different things. One, people getting really big, so they're cheaper, and then others who are trying to, you know, focus on the efficiency of the technology and the solution and the package kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, I want to tie that back into one of the things we were talking about earlier, and that's the GWACs. I've noticed, you know, like on CIOSP3, Alliant, Oasis, you know, the larger companies are really starting, or maybe they've been doing it for a long time. They probably have been. But it seems like the GWAC and MAC arena is becoming much more attractive to them rather than going after you know, the or in company and going after the single award gigs.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, because you are seeing more agencies that are interested in kind of quicker turnaround type projects, and the GWACs are the perfect vehicle for that, where you can, you know, put a task out quickly. You know, you can do a pilot. You can, do a. We're seeing the end of the idea of hiring a company to work 3, 4, 5 years on a system and then deliver it. Instead, the agencies, instead the agencies are looking at, hey, do me a prototype. Let's do a pilot. Let's test it. You know, and then, you know, let's get some capabilities right now and build it on it incrementally. That's the thing that I think we're seeing a big, and that's a big change for contractors. How you incentivize your people, how you deploy resources, all that stuff, and the technologies you need. I think one of the neat things of the cloud, and you have these, you know, being one of these test development, you know, environments where you can, you know, build things and collaborate with the customer and you know, test it and put a little pilot out there and then expand from there. If you have those kind of capabilities, that seems to be very attractive.
Yeah. It's still an interesting game to watch, regardless of where you're sitting, large, small, sidelines, editorial, radio, whatever.
Yeah.
but, you know, we both have skin in the game, you because it's editorial fodder and me because they're my clients. So always intriguing. Any final thoughts?
Well, you know, I think, and we haven't really talked about this, but I think that overall this is going to be a good year, a better year than last year. I think you're seeing kind of cautious optimism out there. And a big part of it is that, you know, the budget deal that gives some, not transparency, what's the right word, visibility into where the market's going. Mm-hmm. But it's also the transition year. We'll have a new administration a year from now. And,
yeah, we haven't even touched on that one.
Yeah, and whoever wins, you know, I think they'll have their initiatives and things like that. So I think some things that are kind of hot topics today may go away, but they always come back with a different name. So they won't call it category management. They'll call it something else. But those concepts, I think, you know, because the government's focus on how they use their resources is not going to go away.
No, it can't go away.
Yeah, it can't. It shouldn't.
Yeah. Cool. Nick, always a pleasure, man.
Okay, thank you, Mark. I apologize for my voice, but hey. Hopefully it came across okay.
Is what it is. Thank you very much. You can find Nick, again, at WashingtonTechnology.com. Look him up on LinkedIn. Connect with him. What the heck? This is not my day job. If you need help, if your marketing program needs help, you definitely need to talk to me. Or if your company is not fully leveraging LinkedIn, we really, really need to talk. You can find me at federaldirect.net or on LinkedIn. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.